Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 446 of the JV Club with my wonderful guest, Lexi Henning. You will hear the full story of how I came to know Lexi and about all of her wonderful work as you listen to the episode. She is currently in grad school in Athens, and I have to say, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what makes her so important and wonderful and special. So I hope very much that you'll enjoy this episode. I also hope that everyone had a very nice Thanksgiving or Indigenous Peoples holiday or any kind of holiday you want to consider the last few days of last week. I hope you are well and safe. And I hope to see some of you in person safely at SF Sketchfest in January. If you want more information on the lineup, you can go to sfsketchfest.com. And I feel certain there will be at least one show you get excited about. All right. Talk to you next week. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you going to school?
Yeah, I'm doing an MA program here at the University of Athens in Athens, Greece. So, yay.
Amazing.
Like, for living abroad.
Yeah.
So, what is time, though? It's so weird because it's like I'm living in Greece and everything I'm doing is here. But most of my communications back home with friends, family, like work, business stuff, it's all back in the U.S. So I'm constantly like staying up to weird hours. I'm up to like 3 a.m. trying to like communicate with people because things need to get done. And so I have no concept of time. So it's like, yeah, I'm in this weird bubble of I'm living in Greece, but I'm also like not actually sort of living in Greece. I'm existing in multiple time dimensions.
I feel like that's something that many of us can relate to just through COVID and sort of finding out what it feels like to be living in some kind of virtual space, which even as Mark Zuckerberg is, and I think most of us feel this way, like even as he's like, the metaverse, guys, I'm going to build this amazing. Everyone's like, I think I'm good. Like, I'd like to see more people. I'd like to maybe feel a little bit less like I'm living in a computer. But maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But yeah, the feeling of being sort of in between two places, or at least it feeling kind of surreal, even though technically you are in this one place. Like, I totally understand that. And it's hard because you want to feel like you're getting the full experience, I'm sure, of being there. And yet you keep having to kind of adjust backwards as if you were not there for certain things.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, my advice would be don't try to like start a business and then go across the sea to a rigorous MA program like the very next year, because it's not like great on the schedule and just keeping things together. So
And so people know, what's the business that you started?
So I started the Ozymandias Project. It is basically, it all stems from my background because I got my BA in classical studies from the University of Missouri. And so I went right from studying the ancient world into politics right out of college because I worked some campaigns and then landed a job working for state government in Illinois, where I'm from. And it was like the most organic thing. I was just kind of like bitching to one of my friends about how I didn't like do enough with the ancient world, ancient studies. And I just felt like I wasn't using my degree in any meaningful way. And I was just like, this is horrible. So he was like, oh, well, you seem to have great conversations. Like, you have a passion. Have you ever thought about like doing anything with that? And I was like, no, not really. So the business actually started as my podcast, Ancient Office Hours.
Which I did when it was still called the Ozymandias, when it itself was going under the name Ozymandias Project.
Yeah, a lot of changes. I mean, we just hit our like 1 year anniversary of existence. And so we wanted to get the name change out early. So we did it at like 6 months. And so I'm constantly trying to remember like, wait, who knew it as the old one? Who knows the new thing? But yes, the new name is Ancient Office Hours. But yeah, it started as the podcast because I was just like noticing I was having great conversations like with professors in office hours when I was in college. And I really wanted to give people a sense of kind of what that felt like, especially if they didn't take advantage. And believe me, so many people don't take advantage of their office hours. And I was like, this is a shame. And I want to teach people. Like, it's a time not just for like getting extra help on school stuff. It's like, you can just go chill and talk to your professors as like chill people and get to know them. And, you know, if you're lucky, maybe they'll invite you to dinner or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I started doing the podcast. And then I had a business-minded friend, because I'm bad at math and I don't do business things. So I never would have thought of it. But he was like, hey, you know, are there other projects you might want to do to like that stem off of this? And I was like, yeah, actually, you know, I'm big into like the archaeology of gaming and video games and this, that, and the other thing. And so he basically just was like, all right, we're going to put all your ideas in one doc. And then he's like, I'm going to help you make a business out of it. And let's just see what it does. So I was like, okay, you take lead. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to podcast over here. I was like, you do it.
I'm going to Greece.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was the craziest thing thinking about it. And I'm so glad my friend is wonderful and trustworthy. And I love him because later, like my friends were like, you know, that's how people take advantage of you, steal your money right, and like run right, away right, when you just right, say do it all yourself and I'll just attach right, my name to it. I was right, like, I didn't think about that. So, so happy. Shout out to Dan for not, you know, stealing my money or my ideas.
Major but, shout out to Dan. Yeah. I mean, those collaborations, and I'm sure, you know, I know you've listened to my podcast, so you know that like that stuff, you either find it out at a very early age because you sort of hang on to it. Because when we're kids, you know, even those of us who are only children, like there's still plenty of socializing that happens at school or, you know, after school or whatever. But and so even somebody that spends a lot of time alone, I feel like, and in school, like being assigned group projects and stuff. But that doesn't always carry over into your adult life. You sort of like some people carry that with them and totally understand that collaboration is huge and shared responsibility and like groupthink in a good way. And, you know, all of that kind of stuff is something that you really want to use and lean hard on. And then others of us feel like, oh, that time is over. Now it's me against the world, or, you know, I have to be able to do everything myself, or, you know, I'm going to work for an organization, but that's going to be my job. That's not necessarily, you know, the place where my best ideas are going to go and all of that. And so how cool to have somebody who, you know, you recognize that, he recognizes that, and everybody's kind of playing to their strengths. So I hope it just, you know, becomes whatever you want it to.
I hope so, too. That's the goal. I mean, going into year two, we have a lot of cool projects. Like today, in fact, we just announced our publishing arm. So we intend to publish kind of what we hope will become like a digital magazine of submissions from people both within academia and outside of it. But if they're inspired by mythology or the ancient world, we were like, okay, just kind of like submit stuff and we want to publish it and, you know, get your valuable thoughts out there. Cause I have like the most interesting Twitter conversations because classics Twitter is like a thing. And that's where all the classicists are. They're on like no other social media.
Wow.
You can't find them except on Twitter. So if you want to like be in the community, it sucks because you have to be on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
But like I found so many great people and such a like welcoming community there. And several people were approaching me and they were like, oh yeah, you know, I want to do this archaeogaming thing, but there's no outlet. Academia sucks sometimes. It's hard. And so I was like, oh yeah, I don't know if there's like a place or a way to, you know, get valuable thoughts out there. And this is coming from academics. But then I was noticing, since I'm also on like gamers Twitter, since, you know, I play video games.
Yeah.
I noticed like game devs were on there, and a few that I'm friends with, they were like, yeah, you know, I think we could use our technology to do so much, but like people don't know this is like an avenue they can do. So I was like, oh, I'm going to connect this. So I just like talked to a friend of mine and I was like, hey, you do gaming stuff, but you don't know ancient world stuff. I'm like, what if you publish a thing as a gamer and just say, we have the technology. Have you historians thought about using it to like digital recreations of the ancient world?
That's so
like
cool.
Use it to do stuff.
Yes.
And so they were like, oh my God. So that's what I'm hoping. I hope.
Oh, I love that. I love the idea of putting those things together. And it is such a no-brainer, right? I mean, even just like in my limited experience, neither being into ancient worlds in an academic way, nor being a gamer, like even just having an Oculus and recognizing how exciting it is to just immerse yourself in this totally different place. Like, that's, it seems like, again, such a no-brainer, not something I would think of. Yet, of course, that's something that should be explored and exploited in the good sense of exploit. I think that's all amazing. I would love to rewind a little further so that we can dig in a little bit to this young woman in Illinois who is a teenager in high school and may or may not have started gaming and being interested in the ancient classics at that age. Where you mentioned before, but you grew up in Illinois. Where in Illinois? Just say again.
Yep, I'm from Chicago.
From straight up Chicago, not a suburb of Chicago, Chicago, Chicago.
Yes, we have to make that very clear, especially since we're very territorial about, you know, claiming Chicago. Yes, no, I had friends all through college. I went to the University of Missouri. So I had friends be like, I'm from Chicago. And then be like, oh my God, you're one of us. Where? And then my friend was like, technically I'm from Rockford. I'm like, just say you're basically from Wisconsin. Like, come on, man. Seriously. So, yes.
Yep. What's your familial structure like? This is stuff that I definitely know about you, but nobody else does, possibly, that's listening to this, except for people who already know you.
Definitely. So I was actually adopted from China at like 6 or 9 months old. I always actually forget because LOL child, but I was adopted from China. So my family is like, you know, I think pretty conventionally unconventional, like most people's families. So my parents actually had quite an age gap between them. So I think it was like 14 years. And so my dad had been married once. And so I had ostensibly 3 older sisters, but like the age gap was so much older that they just felt like aunts at this point. I mean, my oldest nephew is literally 9 months younger than I am.
Yeah.
So I'm one like, of those. All right, then.
Yeah.
So I have 3 older sisters, half sisters, technically.
Were they even in the house when you were growing up, like in a meaningful way that you had interactions with them?
No, unfortunately, because when my parents got married, the youngest of the 3 was basically going off to college.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, yeah, nope.
Why did tell your parents' story, but why did they decide after they had had when your dad remarried and your mom and he got together, what was that? Did they have like a, was that always a plan? Like, we know that we want to adopt a little Chinese girl, because I definitely have friends who that was a very clear feeling. Like, they just had this feeling very strongly in exploring their different options of becoming parents. Like, that happened to be something that drew several friends of mine, actually.
Yeah. So my mom was she wasn't like old or anything, let me just say, but she was older, because she'd kind of just like waited and waited and waited for what felt right. And then, so by the time that they got together, it was my mom's first and at this point only marriage. And she was already like 38. So, you know, just with like freaking female body clocks being set the way they are, she definitely wanted to have her own kids, because that was just kind of like what her family looked like. So that's what she knew. So after years and years of just like trying and nothing working, they were kind of like, well, I guess we could explore adoption. So they didn't actually know China was the one. They just started looking at all the countries that would allow international adoption. And because of their ages, though, they were like aged out of a lot of the programs. Hmm. So they were like, sorry, you're too old. You cannot actually come here and get a kid. So China was just kind of like the lucky one that said, yeah, we don't care how old you are. Sure. Uh-huh. You can prove the stuff. Come here. So,
yeah.
So my mom likes to say that she was like, after they settled on China, she was just like, oh, I immediately got it in my head. I wanted this beautiful little Chinese girl. That's it. That's all I wanted. That's all I dreamt of. She's like, I don't even know what you look like. But she's like, I just knew I want a little Chinese girl. And I'm like, oh, that's sweet. I don't know if you're saying that because you just know me now and love me, or if like that was legitimately what she was thinking. So,
right. I feel like we all have those questions that we ask ourselves, whether they're at the top of mind or it's just sort of back there somewhere when our parents tell us our own origin stories. I think I've thought the exact same thing about my dad, because like he didn't think he wanted kids, and then my mom sort of talked him into it. And so he has his fairy tale version of what that meant. And, you know, it's like it feels always like, is it an oversimplification or is it your pheromones and your just genetics like calling out, like, you know, because of course he's like, and then as soon as I saw you, I'm like, dude, we've all seen newborn babies. Come on. As soon as you saw me, really? As soon as you saw me, you know, everything changed. And so whether our parents are our natural parents or not, sometimes you ask yourself those questions, but it's definitely more uncommon, a little bit different for an adopted kid, right? To sort of like, what was your experience with your origin story? Like, did you sort of remember being told stuff, or was it like in the DNA of your tiniest memories?
So my parents, and thank God for this, but my parents were definitely on the side of, we don't want to like keep it from her. Cause I've had like adopted friends whose parents went the opposite route and tried to like hide it and never wanted to talk about how they were adopted because it would make them seem different. And they were like, no, it's all about like bringing them in.
But wait, are those predominantly like, are your parents white? Are your parents Asian? Are your parents?
So my parents are white. Yes.
Yeah. I guess that's harder than if you're, it's two blonde parents who end up with a blonde child somehow.
You know, you would think that it's obvious, but I did actually meet someone along the way who was adopted by two white parents, and they just never talked about her being adopted and tried to just kind of make it seem like not a big deal, that she looked a little different. So I was like, okay, interesting tactic.
Yeah.
Not my parents. So no, mine were really good about, I mean, they weren't going to offer me a bunch of like info that I wasn't ready for at any point in my life. So they took this really nice tack where if they basically told me what I needed to know, the important stuff. And then if I asked for more, they would offer that information. And so I got to kind of grow up in this like space of, I was told, you know, you're adopted, but, you know, you're still part of the family. Blood does not matter at all. Like, seriously, we don't care. And so growing up when I was younger, that's all the reassurance I really needed. I mean, I didn't know any better. So I was like, okay, whatever. Sure, fine, whatever that means. So I didn't really gain awareness, though, until I felt like probably like middle school-ish when it really started to become apparent, when, you know, kids start asking the uncomfortable questions where you're like, you look different. Where are you from? Wait, who's your like real parents? And like all those like really awkward questions that you're like, I've been avoiding this for the first like 12 years of my life.
Yeah.
I could have, you know, avoided it a little longer, but here we are.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one thing I always was told was, I knew from my parents kind of like the story of the actual adoption story, which is something I can't speak for all adopted kids, but for the ones in my orbit, we all seem to have been told a very similar story. So I don't know how unique it is, but, you know, the basic is really just my parents said that my Chinese parents left me on the like front steps of, like in front of the gate of this orphanage, and I was wrapped up in like blankets, and I had like a note kind of pinned to me that had my name and my birthday, and that the night guard found me, and then I was like put in the orphanage. So, you know, I was kind of like, okay, I don't know what, you know, an 8-year-old child does with that information other than go, I have a fun story if anyone wants to hear it. Like, cool.
Yeah, it's true. Like, it doesn't, when do things mean what they mean to us as kids? Like, it's hard to process stuff. I mean, even just remembering, like, my understanding or my relationship to when my first grandparent died was so different in the time it took for me to get, you know, 15 years older, 20 years older to experience my final grandparent's death. And you know what I mean? Like, so it's just as a kid, like the way you process information that you weren't there for, it's one thing if you experience it. And even that is like, you know, hard to know when you're going to feel what and what it's going to feel like existentially. But then to have it be a story that you have no memory of. It's just a story. It's like, how do you untangle that from all the other stories that maybe you're not at the center of that also feel like fairy tales in a sense? Like, I mean, I would guess as an 8-year-old kid, like your relationship is not like, well, having spent a lot of time in China in the, and having been to orphanages and knowing what it looks like when that happens, like you're all of it is sort of you're using your imagination, right?
It puts you in a really weird space. But also, interestingly enough, like coming back to it, because like growing up, you hear it and you just kind of internalize it as just another story that your parents might tell you. And then, you know, when you get older and then you start to come back to it, it's almost like excavating. It's honestly like training you into being a historian, like of your own volition, because then you're like, oh, it's like layers of archaeology. Wait, I've got to like dig back through this and I've got to figure out what is the story. Like,
yes,
it's quite exciting, but it, I mean, for some people, I know people who are like basically my age who were adopted and they still don't really want to deal with that. So they haven't gone through that journey. I was lucky enough that I kind of hit that in high school, actually, but more into college. It started at the end of high school, and then it was really into college where I really was like, okay, I'm going to sit and I'm going to start to unpack this in a way that feels more historical because there's like proof. I can read things, I can look at things and not just have to be told about them. So that made for a really different experience, for me at least. But it definitely causes like certain issues because like middle school, like end of middle school, early high school, I definitely had a really complicated relationship with like my own adoption story.
Yeah.
There was like a solid period where I did not want to own it. And I just could not make myself think positively about like China or Chinese culture or people for whatever reason. And it was definitely not like a I hate Chinese people or whatever, but almost like as a defense mechanism, I had
totally
to kind of
get it.
Be like, well, you know, and this is in like the most simplified, horrible way, but like the short answer of it was I had to tell myself, like, I am here because China essentially just didn't want me. They threw girls out like, you know, yesterday's trash left and right. And I was like, I can't just like handle that thought.
That's a lot. So I was like, no. That's a lot. That's a lot of, it's a lot of complicated for as an American, which a hugely flawed nation, like no arguments there. And everything looks worse from the outside when you're looking at the negatives of a country, right? I mean, from the inside, we can sort of justify it or like shove it away, or we can vote against it, or we can do whatever we can do. But we also are inside it. And so we have a totally different perspective than being on the outside of something. And so the way that the US views China in the sort of, again, clumsiest, most over umbrella bearing, like, how does it best suit the government to describe China? How does it best suit business? All of these things that have these loud, impersonal voices are often the ones that are telling us the most about places that we've never been, or, you know, many of us have never been, and foreign countries and what their beliefs are, or what their. So, I mean, it's tough for anybody. And then when you put on top of that the relationship to your own birth story and how you process those emotions and stuff, like, that is a lot. That is a lot, girl.
Yeah,
you should
man.
Be very proud of yourself for the kind of journey. And I know the journey is like very woo-woo word in some context, but like, good on you, you know? And I really appreciate you sharing this because I think it's so important.
And I think definitely, especially in this time now, you know, it. I would say that I went through this whole journey kind of, as I said, like at the end of high school into college, and like that was helpful, but it didn't really mean a lot. And then actually, I kind of like was like, oh, I feel like I've unpacked it enough. I'm fine. I'm confident. And then I'd like put it away in a box. And then I was like, okay, maybe I come back to it. Maybe I don't. And then surprisingly, because of the pandemic and then because of Trump and everyone blaming China and, you know, even being in a big liberal city like Chicago, I was definitely not immune to like looks and like, the whispers.
Every non-Caucasian race like gets its turn or like, you know, it just like. We're always finding ways to like other somebody, and then if you happen to be like, you're going to get othered within your own community. I mean, it's just bonkers.
Yeah. So I mean, it came back with a vengeance for sure, and like because of the renewed focus on China and then the trade wars with China and like all the other geopolitical crap that was happening just made it like not really fantastic to be Asian. And then I like thought I was like feeling that alone. And I was like, oh, you know, I guess, you know, I'm kind of like ashamed. Like when I would go out of my house, you know, the dark shades, the like the mask and even like the stuff, just the cap. So you couldn't tell just because I was like, I don't want to invite anything, because I had a an Asian friend in New York get like spit on in the MTA, and I was like, okay, I don't
want to
do that.
Crazy.
Okay,
sorry,
yeah, no, it's
a tantrum.
Yeah, no, it's insane. And like, you know, I had a friend get verbally assaulted, and so I was like, I was hearing all this stuff, and I was like, okay, I'm just not even gonna deal with that. And then I learned it was more important than ever, though, to like take back this idea of my Asian heritage is not a weakness. I should not be ashamed of it. And so actually in the first few months of the pandemic, it was probably the most like empowering, inspiring points of all of the pandemic, because I made the active choice to take out this box with my like identity. And then
Lexi, I've got goosebumps.
And then like my friend was like, oh, you're like gonna get into Chinese culture. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, and I'm gonna do more than just the surface level stuff. I'm like, no, I'm gonna actually explore it. And so she knows I love like worldly music from different countries. I don't care if it's in English. And so she was like, hey, have you ever listened to Mandopop? And I was like, no, because I just, that's not something that I would have thought about ever. And so she was like, check out these like artists. You might like that. Let me tell you, I got so into like two or three artists that like for a solid month, my mom was like, I think it's amazing you're getting back into like Chinese culture. She's just like, can you please play something else though? Because you're listening to the same three people. And she's like, oh my gosh, I hear it all the time. So I was like, okay.
That's amazing.
Right. But
that's amazing.
It was definitely, that was like my big sort of, okay, I'm taking this back. And I've never like felt prouder. And at the same time, I like had a friend in China that I would talk to almost like on a daily basis. We would text for literally like 7 hours through the night. I would like sort of look at the clock and be like, oh my God, it's like 5 a.m. Have we been texting literally since 10 p.m. the last night? Yes. So yeah, it was just great to connect. And it's funny. The only thing I didn't really do was, you know, go back and find, rediscover a passion to learn Mandarin. My mom always wanted me to learn because she thought it would connect me to China. And so she put me in like Mandarin classes when I was in high school. And she hoped.
Right around the time that you maybe weren't in a place where that was going to do what it
and
wanted
I,
it. Should
and
have wanted
I feel
to do.
Bad because I like scared myself out of it, because it was like my mom would tell me that like my teachers apparently told her that I was one of the best in the class because I got it. I had a really good ear for language, but that's probably because I grew up bilingual in English and French. So like, I just like have an ear for language. And I guess I like, I wouldn't allow myself to like just sort of go with the compliment. And I would just say, no, I'm terrible at Chinese. No, 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 I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's a tonal language. I speak it like shit. Everything's flat. Yeah. This is not working. And I like convinced myself I couldn't learn Mandarin. To the point then I could not, like I basically created a mental block for myself.
But and I know that you say you feel bad about it, but I hope that you don't like core deep feel bad about it, because as we've established, and I'm not your therapist, I just made it sound like I was.
It's fine. You know what? Everyone in the world can be my therapist. Give me all the advice. I'm good.
No, but you know, there's, it just like, of course. And that is not your fault. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just like where you were at that point. And we do things when we're ready, and we actively do things when we're not ready to make sure we aren't ready. Yeah. And then we passively do things when we're not ready. Do you know what I mean? Like there's all these different ways. It's amazing how active we can be at not doing something, right?
Like, oh, for sure. All the time.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hello, I'm Pee Wee Herman. You might know me from TV, but I really want to be a DJ. It took some convincing. But KCRW finally agreed to give me an hour on the radio to play you some music with my friends. Anyway, tune in for 1 hour of the bestest, most funnest time you'll ever have on the Pee Wee Herman Radio Hour. I am personally inviting you to tune your transistor radio in to hear me, or go to kcrw.com. Duh. It'll be available for the whole week, from November 26th to December 3rd. So you can listen to it again and again and again and again and again.
The Pee Wee Herman Radio Hour was produced by Maximum Fun and can be streamed on KCRW.com until December 3rd.
As you've had this continuing relationship with, you know, Chinese culture and your own history, a couple things really struck me as you were saying that. Of course, the most kind of on the surface, like, Janet, you're not going to win any Nobel Prizes for putting this together. But, you know, having had the passion and the interest that you have and having explored, you know, the history of other ancient cultures, you know, you do have a different tool set for kind of understanding and appreciating and kind of parsing through all these different levels of your own history, which you said already. And also, I just love, you know, your own story. Again, it's something that is shared for all of us. Like, all yours is more unusual and kind of unique and, in my opinion, special because of where you're from. But we do all have those, like, I've had to, like, revisit stories that I have been told about my own history or, you know, my own, like, half religious, you know, half my family side of it. Like, that stuff that you just kind of come back to at different ages. And it's funny because I always think about that when people talk about Avatar, you know, because I've been doing this podcast with Dante Bosco. And so often we end up talking about how people grew up on it. And then when they come back to it, they're like, wait a minute, like, there's all of this stuff I didn't even see was there when I was six. And so, not to minimize it and make it like a TV show, but if anything, obviously to sort of, like, you know, maximize, like, something like Avatar or other things that we love that have all these layers, that's, like, part of the journey too, right? It isn't that we think that when we're younger that we'll process things as we go and then those things stay behind. Like, solve that. Okay, lock that up. Solve this next thing. Cool. It's like I'm cleaning house. This is great. At the end, I'll just have a big empty room and that's heaven or whatever. In fact, it's like, no, that stuff is all around you all the time. And it's good to go back and open that box again and say, none of this material inside is going to be the same, even if it's the same, because I'm not the same.
Well, and it's interesting. So I love that you did actually bring up Avatar. I was like, okay, try not to do it. But I was like, you opened the door. So I'm like, no, I have
to. I mean,
to.
It's helpful that it does honor Asian culture as well. So it's a very nice serendipitous thing there.
So I'm like, okay, I'm entitled. So the thing I will say is Avatar does actually feature quite heavily into my own journey with my identity because, fun little story, the original Avatar show came out in 2005, and I have a very clear memory of coming home with a friend who lived like 2-3 blocks away from me, and we were in her kitchen eating Go-Gurts. I know those were things, but like Go-Gurts. And we were just like trying to think, okay, like, what are we going to go watch? Because she had this like really cool basement projector. And so we were like, yeah, after school, we just want to go watch movies. And her kitchen TV, for whatever reason, was on. And we were about to turn it off when I heard this, like, you know, standard commercial voice going, like, stay tuned, and now the world premiere of Avatar, The Last Airbender. And I was like, you know, do you mind if we just sit in the kitchen? Because I think this thing, it sounds really cool. And I don't even know what it
is.
And so she was just like, oh, sure, let's do it. So I remember, we sat on her kitchen stool eating our Go-Gurts and we watched the first episode ever for the world premiere on TV.
Oh my gosh.
And that memory has stuck with me because it made such an impact. And they did the cool thing where they do like the first two episodes since they're so short. So they were like, so we watched the first two together and I could not get it out of my head. And that was the first time that I really positively wanted to acknowledge that, like, this thing is based on, like, Asian culture, but it's really cool. And I was such a tomboy growing up that I was like, bending is like the coolest thing ever. Holy crap. Wait, can I wish I could do that. So, that was like the only thing that was distinctly Asian that I wanted to own when I was that age. Cause you know, like fifth grade, you're like 10 years old. So I was definitely not anywhere near being able to really deal with being Asian. So yeah, it's just, I rejected everything about Asian culture back then, except I wanted to own Avatar, because when I talked to my friends about Avatar, who also had started watching it, I was like, oh yeah, you know, I look like them. That's me. you know, I'd be like an earthbender, airbender, whatever. And they were just like, where is this coming from? You don't talk about anything Asian. And I'm like, they're like, you can't just pick and choose. I'm like, yeah, I can, because this is awesome. Can. So, you know, I had that growing up. And it was, you know, really short. It was 3 seasons. And, you know, I kind of watched it. And then I put Avatar away in a drawer, mental drawer. And then when Korra came out, I had a lot of friends who also were fans of the original series. And they were like, oh, okay, you got to watch this one. It's really awesome. And I guess I missed the boat on it because I was wrapped up in my own head and my own troubles at that point. So I remember thinking, well, I could watch it, but I don't want it to just be another escape, especially since the first series was so good. Mm-hmm. And so I actually made the conscious decision to not watch Korra when it was airing on TV. I was like, I'm sure it's going to come out on something, or I'll just buy it and I'll watch it later when I feel more capable emotionally and just like confidently to be able to really take it in. Because I wanted a completely different experience from being a little kid and watching the original. So, much to my friend's chagrin, no, we did not watch it together. So I do not have memories of running home and watching Korra live. But I'm so glad I waited. And, you know, it's like later became later and later. And then eventually my friend was like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. She's like, I've read all the comics. I've done all the stuff. She's like, I've gone to all the cons, met all the actors, cosplay. She's like, can you please just watch the damn show so you can come with me? She's like, you're going to love it. And I was like, no, I'm waiting for the right moment. And then the pandemic hit and I hit that, like, let's get back into my heritage and let's own the shit out of it. And then it came out on like Netflix. And then I was like, Is this the time? Am I finally gonna like take a bite out of this forbidden pie that I've put away since it came out in 2014? I was like, should we do it? I was like, yes, we're doing it. So I was like, it just felt right in so many different ways that at this moment I was like, all right, I'm gonna finally do it. So then I marathoned through Korra. I swear I did not sleep. I did the worst thing ever. I was still like working during the days and somehow I like stayed up all night and watched it. And so I finished it in like a week, I don't even know. We're going to pretend that it was something reasonable, but I finished it. And then, and then like, I messaged all my friends and I was like, oh my God, you're right. But I wanted to like engage in discussions with them about it. Cause I was like, but I'm coming at it from this really interesting time in my life. You know, I'm out of college. I've developed a skill set. I'm seeing parallels between my own path, like out of college. And I related to it so much. And so that's actually like the day that I finished it is when I decided to write you, because I was like, you know me. I was like, I don't really care about Hollywood. That's not really my jam. And I was like, famous people just like are too busy, honestly. So but I was like, no, because I felt like so strongly about this journey that I was on and rediscovering myself. I was like, it's OK. Even if she never reads it, I'll feel confident that I got the message out there, because I was like, I just want to thank her. I just want to like tell whoever's the most accessible human who was a part of this show, thank you, because it really meant a lot. So that's when I just sat and then, you know, the rest of the story. I wrote like 6 pages, 7 pages handwritten. That was I didn't think it was supposed to be that long, but so I like called my friend afterward and I think I debated for like a solid 4 hours with her on the phone. I was like, Should I just type it? Because I think this would be a shorter email. Because then I could pretend it's like like in a Word document, so it's like one page and it looks reasonable. Because yeah. I can like make the font smaller. So uh-huh. I was like, I want it to be all like cutesy and like it means more if you handwrite it. But now I'm like, it's like yeah. 7 pages. Oh my uh-huh. God, she's gonna think I'm like a crazy stalker person. And she was just like, yeah. No, it means it comes to the heart. She's like, whatever. You're using like paper. She's like, just do it. So then I was like, all right, whatever. You know what? It's fine. So. Sent that off. It lived.
That was a great letter. What if I was like, and I wish I'd read it, but of course I didn't. No. No, I mean, you know, because you heard from me. It was a wonderful, one of the best fan letters I've ever gotten. And it feels weird to say fan letter because that feels like it puts a separation between you and me or between me and, again, to your point, like there's no difference there. It just happens that I ended up doing a thing that creates a scenario in which, much to my chagrin, I don't know those people. I can't know them because yeah. I haven't experienced them yet or what they're about. And that's kind of the hardest thing about doing stuff like this is that you sort of have to, I mean, I hate it. I hate when I meet a fan of the podcast that I clearly am, you know, will get along with. And they know too. It's just an information gap where it's like, oh shit, you know all this stuff about me and I don't know anything about you, but I don't want that to feel like intimidating or a deterrent or a turnoff or whatever, because that defeats the whole purpose of the podcast. So it's this little kind of cycle that, you know, you just have to go, well, it doesn't, that none of that matters. I mean, you know, you'll find where you connect and the rest of that stuff sort of rolls out and takes care of itself.
But, I mean, you know, I think I got lucky in the sense that, so my brother-in-law is actually a movie reviewer for the New York Times. You might have heard of him. His name is A.O. Scott. Mm-hmm, So because he was like vaguely a person like of notoriety, I got to learn by observing kind of what he did and how he approached, because he would like interview like really famous people. I remember like I was visiting my sister and him. They live in Brooklyn. So we were like at a Nets game and he was like, oh my God, Jessica Chastain just followed me on Twitter. He's like, what do I, you know, he's like, wait, no, he's like, no. So I got to learn from him kind of how he approached, because there is this like wall that you were talking about like, how do you approach someone who is clearly more in the well-known sort of realm? Yeah. And it's because it's awkward because it does put a wall between you and like other people. And so I honestly just learned and watched how he went around about his business as people sort of knew him, but also him then interviewing people who were like A-listers in Hollywood. So honestly, at the end of the day, I feel like I got really lucky to learn from him because I just settled on, these are people. They want to be treated like people. It's not fun if you just run up to them and start saying everything you love about them and they're like overwhelmed. So I'm like, the fastest way to like establish just a good natural relationship where it's not creepy, it's not weird, and like it does break down those barriers, is just talk to them like an actual freaking person. That's what they'll appreciate most. Like,
for sure.
You know, you're not going to, you don't have to be best friends. Just talk normally. Too many people getting like nervous. You know, I'm like, why are you getting nervous? Like, I understand like the thing, but like, hopefully you should not be nervous. Yeah.
And even nerves are better than, I mean, and I want to get back to you and I want to get into this MASH game and all that good stuff. But that just, I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the podcast before, I don't know if you would want me to tell, but anyway, one of the people that I'm friends with, blah, 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 who's very famous, you know, people will come up to him and they don't want to talk to him. They just want to take their picture with him. And sometimes it's because they think that's easier and faster. And I totally get that. I think you can sort of suss out when that's what's happening. But when someone comes up and is just like, someone in my life likes you, can we take a picture? That's like, it's so impersonal and it turns that person into a commodity. And I think that's the most tiring thing about being famous, isn't the person who wants to come up, even if they are nervous and says, your work has meant so much to me. Like, you know, listen, if you're Tom Hanks, like, God bless you, because you are going to get that all the time every day and your day is going to stretch out and become like, I got one thing done out in public. Like, that's hard. That is hard. But I think the worst thing must be people who they don't care. Like, it might as well be you in the wax museum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For like the photo moment. And that was something that I observed him actually say to someone, was like, Well, hey, so you don't, what, you haven't even told me your name. Like, there was just, it was very clear, you know, and then that person left and he was like, you know, that's my least favorite thing is when I don't matter to that person, but they want to brag that they took a picture with me and that's the only exchange they want. And it's clear that that's the only value there. And like, and that's the worst part, you know?
You know,
so I get it.
You know, I'd never thought that like that would really apply to me. But then, you know, after like starting a podcast and then, you know, it's not like I'm, you know, big name or anything, but like there are people now on social media who'll be like recognizing either my voice or, you know, my face or
sure.
something. And so I was like, oh, actually, you know, I could apply that right to myself because it is yeah. something I have to keep in mind that I was like, oh, I didn't really think about that because, you know, I was like, I'm like this turtle. I'm this like vampire introverted person. Like, I'm like, if it was up to me.
Anybody who can call themselves both a turtle and a vampire is like amazing. Back to back. That's amazing.
Just turtle vampire introvert person.
My little turtle vampire. My vampire turtle. The blood-sucking turtle.
You know, if Fantastic. I could be, you know, if I could be a combination of animals, I'm like, or supernatural creatures, I'm like, yeah, vampire turtle.
There
like,
you go. I know. We got to pop you into whatever Avatar Studios is doing next in the form of a vampire turtle.
I'm so here for it.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
The Beef and Dairy Network is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast here on Maximum Fun, and I would recommend you listen to it. But don't just take it from me. What do the listeners have to say?
Would I recommend Beef and Dairy Network podcasts? No, I don't think I would.
Right, let me be very clear about this. Under no circumstances would I recommend this to anyone I've ever met.
No, absolutely not. No, I couldn't.
I feel quite sick thinking about the things I've heard.
Please stop calling me. Please leave me alone.
That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, available at MaximumFun.org and at all good and some bad podcast platforms.
Literally, just leave me alone.
Okay, honey, I got to get into this MASH game with you because we're running out of time.
Yes.
And there's so much we didn't talk about specific to your high school experience because you have a big capital B story that we ended up really talking about, which I think in the long run, I just love that you shared that. And I think that's like that's just as valuable, perhaps more valuable than me asking you what bands you were listening to.
You know, it's totally fine. And I personally find that more interesting about myself anyway, because let's be real, I had a very conventional high school experience. Like, I was like, honestly, if people expecting high school want the recap, it's I loved my high school. I loved everyone. I had a group of friends. You know, I wasn't like super popular, but I wasn't like an outcast. It was fine. I graduated and then I moved on. Perfectly
yeah,
normal.
There you go. I mean, I guess we only needed 30 seconds to do this podcast. No. Okay. Well, this is what I was thinking is we could sort of shoehorn some of that stuff into this MASH game because that's always a fun way to let out a few more facts.
Sure.
So to get into the gaming, let's do three games. Did you start gaming in high school?
A little before then, actually.
Okay. So when you're in high school, give me three games that you would have wanted to be able to, and hopefully for nostalgia's sake, if nothing else, you would still want to jump into and sort of be in and that world were real in
some way,
but you're also safe.
Okay. Well, I was a nerd. So when I was gaming, there was this really old game called like Pharaoh, where you would like build your own like ancient Egyptian civilization kind of and sort of like
see
rule
how that
it.
Would appeal to you.
Yeah. So just okay. for like nostalgia's sake, I'm gonna go
yeah.
with that one.
Great.
You know, I played a lot of Sims 2, like so much that my parents would come in and like confiscate my computer because uh-huh. they would see the light on from under my door at, you
yeah.
know, all hours.
Yep.
So Sims 2 definitely. Because I would also just like make my characters rich and have the biggest mansion. So if I could just slide in, perfect.
Yeah.
What else was I playing at that age? Okay, well, if nothing, okay, is anything going to happen to me if I go into this game?
No, you're safe.
Okay. Because there was this, I love sharks. if there's one thing to remember about me, it's I love sharks. Shark Week. Live every week like a Shark Week is basically
and
like
I'm a vampire
the motto
turtle
of my life. So there was
some sharks are basically vampire turtles. So it's cool. It actually makes sense.
Exactly. So there was this great, great game. Talk about retro. It was called Jaws Unleashed, where you were the shark and you just like literally control the shark. And like the point of the game was you try to go bite and like knock over like yachts and stuff. And so I would just play that and be this like huge shark and be like, this is the coolest thing ever. So I'd be in Jaws Unleashed then.
Amazing. Amazing. That feels like a good, like weird, like a therapy that could also go totally awry for someone who is afraid of sharks. Like, no, we're going to give you the shark's perspective. And then like that either goes well or it goes poorly in any number of ways, in any number of ways. It makes you more afraid. It makes you weirdly aggressive. Like there's all kinds of stuff. But that's awesome. I totally would have played that game. No question.
I think it's still around, it's still out there. Or there's like a newer version of it that you can sort of play. So I can
Jaws
try to find
Unleashed.
It.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. Next category, let's do, why don't we just go ahead and do it? Bending powers.
So I am always and forever. I mean, like Earth. I mean, come on. That's, I've got my like Badger Mole shirt on. I don't know if you can tell.
I know it's a great Badger Mole. I knew it was going to be Avatar based, and I assumed it was Earth because it's olive green. But I couldn't see what the shape was. I could only see like the first few curly cues at the top. But fantastic.
Yeah, I mean Earth.
I have my Korra sweatshirt on.
Oh yes, look at that perfect representation.
Yeah.
Oh man, you know it's so hard because I would always just tell friends, if I can't be the Avatar, I would totally be the world's greatest earthbender. No disrespect to Toph. Yeah. I love her. But
I'm going to put Avatar in as a second. Why not?
Okay. Why not? Give me the powers of the Avatar.
So that only leaves you with one now that you have to pick. So you have to choose between three other elements, basically.
Oh, man. I mean, but now it's getting into, like, there's the sub-bending fields where I'm like, I mean, I can't just pick metal. That's boring. I'm not going to pick metal because that is... I'm going to assume if I could bend earth, I'll bend metal. I guess my second would be like firebending, I guess. There's something I like about firebending.
I guess.
Like it suits my personality. Yeah. Like it. Right. Friends would say that suits my personality more than earth. Although I don't know, I can be pretty stubborn. So
that's another thing I love so much is I always feel like it's hard to have the conversation for me without wanting to overcomplicate it, especially on Braving the Elements, because while that you would think that would be like the perfect place to overcomplicate it, by the end and when we're asking guests, it's kind of a bad time to overcomplicate it. But I do always feel like there's like three versions of that question, you know? And I think people who are into sorting houses and stuff like that, like Sorting Hat, Sorting Houses, between Harry Potter, get it. But like, it is like, it's like, what do you wish you were? What do you feel you are? And what do your friends feel you are? Because that is not necessarily going to be one and the same. Those three might be wildly different things, you know?
Yeah, but bending is like the weird one because when I tell people like what my Harry Potter house and I am a Ravenclaw, people are like, oh my God, that makes sense for you. They were like, of course, you couldn't be anything other than a Ravenclaw. But it's like, for bending though, they're just like, you know, but you're... Like what you think you are, that's not what we think you are. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I guess that's like the weird one, but
it's fair. I think that's so interesting. And I've taken three different Harry Potter tests and I've gotten three different answers. But when I tell people that, they're like, I know, but you played an Avatar, so it's fine. okay. Next category, let's do food. Let's do three foods. You know, the rule. It could be ecologically maybe not great, but in this universe, we're changing all of that and it can still be cheeseburgers or whatever, or it could be allergy, or it could be just this one thing you've had once and you wish you could have it at the snap of your fingers. Three.
Oh, man. See, as a foodie, this is so hard because I'm trying desperately to eliminate like entire food, like intense cultural meals, you know, being in Greece. I'm just like, I'm like picturing these great Greek meals. I'm like, okay, I'll try to make it simpler. Okay, I guess, can I combine my favorite meal together, steak and mashed potatoes? Because like, that's always together. Always together. Yeah. Like you can't. Yeah, so I can't separate steak and mashed potatoes.
I'm comfortable with that.
You know what? I used to have a sweet tooth when I was little, and my favorite candy to this day is still Twizzlers. But like, You know, I want to go something a little more unconventional. Let's just say goldfish, because those are freaking addicting.
Oh, yeah.
They're like so sweet, addicting.
Oh, no, wait. Like cracker?
Yes.
Like cracker goldfish?
Like the goldfish. They're so addicting. Because I always see like a pile and I'm like, okay, I could just have one handful and I'm fine. And then, you know, 10 handfuls later, I'm like, this was a mistake.
For sure. For sure.
Okay, so goldfish and then, you know, I had this really great baguette the other day. Oh, the perfect French baguette. It was almost like out of the movie Ratatouille, you know, where they're like, how do you, you know, spot a good bread? It's by the sound of the, like, the crinkle. And then, you know, you crack it and you're like, oh, yeah, that's
perfect.
Just give me baguettes all day.
Oh,
all
my
day,
God.
Every day.
Absolutely. Okay. Beautiful. Okay. Next category. Let's do three. Let's do three characters from Avatar or Korra that we can sort of pull out of those worlds and they can be your buddy.
Oh, man. Oh, that's so hard. That's so hard. So
this is the midterm part of the, I guess it's more of a final exam.
Yeah, the final exam. I'm like, well, okay. Classic answer, Uncle Iroh, because I mean, I love tea. I am a huge tea drinker. I don't actually drink coffee. So I'm like, I would just need to share teas with Iroh all the time.
Yes.
But he would be happy about it because he loves tea.
He would be very happy.
So, okay, definitely. That's definitely. All right. So I'm like, so now I got my like wise one who just provides me with wisdom. I feel like, oh God, it's like between like Sokka and Bolin because I just want a funny somebody to keep me laughing all the time. Ugh. I think Sokka's going to get the edge though.
Great.
Because we'd be drinking cactus juice together, I swear. That's what we'd be doing. So
well, Sokka has that sarcastic edge that Bolin is. I mean, I love Bolin. I don't know. I might choose Bolin, but it's because I'm more. I like feel I bring the Sokka. Do you know what I mean? Like so only because of that. But it's, you know, having
it,
his
it balances
having
you out.
His kind of twisted sarcasm is a little bit different than Bolin is not that. He's more guileless, you know?
Yeah.
He's more just like, he loves everybody. The problem is that I now love Jack DeSena almost as much as I love PJ. And so it feels like a crushing blow because they both have a lot of the qualities of those characters. So I'm like, no, don't make me choose. Okay, great. So I got Iroh, I got Sokka.
You know what? I'm just going to go with Toph because she's my girl. Like, I love Toph. She's my girl.
Yeah. Love, 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 love. Okay. Fabulous. Great. Okay. Next category. Let's do three alternate universe careers.
Oh,
present
man.
Day careers.
Present
because
day.
I'll give you a spoiler, which is the next category will be like places that you can go back and see with your own eyes. Of course, I'm going to do that.
Of course. For the major history.
But I didn't want, I was afraid you would be like, wait, does it have to be like this era? Or could I have been this during the ancient? And I'm like, no. Present day career because we're getting to the being able to spend time in a different time and place.
Okay. So it sounds so boring and conventional, but honestly, I would love to be a professor. But it dream career, instead of like having to pick a like entrenched department or thing.
Right.
If I could just be a professor on like perpetual like reception studies and like public outreach advocate for accessibility to the ancient world, like that would be my sweet spot of can I just forever do the public advocacy thing and just talk about how amazing like the ancient world is and classics and all that stuff.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay, great.
Oh, okay. So that's one. So, okay, two, I guess I'll give you my backup dream of like ruling the world and being like the evil emperor. I'm kidding. I wouldn't be the evil emperor, but I wish to at least be some kind of president situation, prime minister, whatever. I'll take it.
Great.
Just because I'd want to go in and then I'd want to like dictate actually good policies, because as someone who worked in government and saw how many disgustingly shitty policies and how it works, I'm like, I'm so disgusted. Yeah. I'm like, I would know how to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We need this. Yes. Great.
Oh, man.
Number three.
What would I do? I guess if I had the skills, because I mentioned I can't do math and tech things and like coding is just like something I'm never going to do.
Yeah.
If I could be the person to like build the technology that does like VR ancient recreations of like the ancient world, ancient monuments. Yeah. I could be the one to code that in and then just be making like more than just like Minecraft stuff, but like actually make the stuff.
Yes.
That would be, love it. That's what I would do.
Gorgeous. Okay, great. All right. You had it in advance. Three ancient worlds or three places in time that you can, you're in a safety bubble, but you're going to see, smell, taste, like you can see, you know, you can have as much exposure as you want. Listen, you might be walking down a street that has like a sewer ditch dug in it. You can be like, I'm going to turn my sense of smell off right now.
Oh, that, I mean, two of these are quite easy. I mean, for one, ancient Greece during like the Peloponnesian War era. So that's, you know, just say 5th century Greece, because that's when all the classical stuff is being built and Pericles. So, yeah, 5th century ancient Greece. I'm going to give some love to ancient Egypt, because I wanted to be an Egyptologist when I was in 6th grade. And that's what got me started on this life-changing path of ancient world love.
Love it.
So, yeah, definitely ancient Egypt. You know what? I'm going to be a little controversial in that Egypt answer, though, and I'm going to say I want to go to the Amarna period, because I want to talk to Akhenaten and just be like, yo, are you crazy? Or are you like, like, what's up? So it's great if I don't get hurt, because, you know, he could totally just like order me executed. So that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one, you know, it's so hard because there's such great periods of history. You know what? I'm going to go with like ancient, like Scotland and Ireland, since they're both linked intrinsically, do the great Celtic civilizations. You know, who made up these incredible Celtic myths? Because let me tell you, I don't think I've ever heard crazier myths than Celtic ones. I mean, there's my favorite, Death by Cheese, where this dude like... kills his competition by putting some cheese in a slingshot. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Like, I want to meet who came up with that story.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, great. All right, next one, romance, sexy times, characters, real people, any time, any era, cartoons, doesn't matter, three romantic interests.
Oh, that's so hard, because I always go back and forth on this question just like in my everyday life anyway. So... okay, yeah. I'm going to give some love to, and this is probably pretty unconventional. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say it the whole time I've been listening to your show. So I'm going to go with Annabeth from the Percy Jackson series, because she is like, I just remember reading these books when I was in like high school and thinking, oh my God, she's like a combination of smart. She's an action hero, but like daughter of Athena, like what is not to love? So
yeah.
Yeah,
we're great. No, Annabeth. I've never heard that. I guarantee you no one's ever said Annabeth.
Great. So I'm going to be the first. I'm so proud.
Nice.
So definitely Annabeth. And anyone who knows me or knows the books will know that's a perfect answer. Just saying. Okay. How do I top perfection? Ooh.
Good luck.
This is so hard. Okay. You know what? I'm going to go bold and say there's that. Oh, my God. Robert Pattinson, I know I hate the fact that I actually am using him because I try to stay away from big names, but the way he looked in the movie Water for Elephants, he was just so pretty. And, you know, he's a young veterinarian student, and he just was so like complete opposite of how he looked in Twilight. And so I appreciate it all the more because he looks so
awkward. I totally get that. It's in
that
context too. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
got
it. Yeah, Robert Pattinson just from Water for Elephants. And then, oh God, you know what? I'm going to hearken back to my high school days of when I was a freshman. That was the very beginning of like the renewed vampire trend, because I was a freshman in 2009 and the Vampire Diaries had just started airing. And so that was our ritual. Get me some Stefan Salvatore, please. That is just what I want. Yes, please.
Great, great, great. Awesome. Okay, perfect. All right. And then last one, let's do real life places now that we can give you a vacation or just a second home. Doesn't have to be that you're on vacation, a second home somewhere. And we're going to sort of teleport you there so you don't have to worry about the distance.
Well, okay. Again, that's easy. So I studied in Ireland during college and fell completely in love with the people in the country. So I mean, honestly, if I could just live anywhere now, yeah, I would spend the rest of my life in Ireland. Now, if I can pick like a fun place, I mean, it's not, it's an ancient castle. It's called Ashford Castle. It's like a hotel now, but like if I could just like buy Ashford Castle back and live in it, it's like perfect. So
where in Ireland is it? Is it like near? Is it southern, northern?
No, so it's on the west coast. So it's in the province. What do they call them? Region? Connacht? It's basically kind of between, I think, County Mayo and County Galway. It's somewhere like near there. I'm so sorry. Right.
I'm just putting West Coast, and in my mind, I mean, I've never been there, so I have a vague sense of it based on like books and or television shows or movie. Like I could sort of place things like, okay, I just podcasted Maeve Higgins, so Cork is on my mind. Anyway. Okay, great. Ashford Castle, got
Ashford
it.
Ashford Castle, more. Yeah. Just it will do.
Which,
to
by the
west.
Way, if you get an apartment, I guess you'll just have an apartment nearby the castle. But if you get a mansion, you'll get the castle.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. The grounds are huge. I will take even a shot on the grounds. Good. So
fantastic. It may come to that.
Okay, so definitely Ireland. Oh, I'm struggling. Okay, I mean, if I'm being honest, like Greece. Cause, I mean, I know I'm already here, but as a classicist, I feel duty bound to. I spent God knows how many number of years of my life invested in studying Greece. But I will say my favorite place in Greece is actually the island of Naxos, because it is not one of the more touristy ones. You know, it's not like a Santorini. It's not a Mykonos. Right. It's not a party island. It's like the big, nice one where families go. And it's just like the most calm, chill, amazing place. And my friend owns a horse stable there. And so I can go ride and, you know, help out. And so that's just my like idyllic rest of my life.
That's
dream.
Awesome. Great.
Where else would I want to live? Like, I don't, you know what? I know it's so cliche, but I spent a semester abroad in college in Scotland. And you know what? I fell in love with Scotland as well. So I'm just
I don't know that that's that much of a cliche. I mean, if you said Paris, which by the way, I would be totally on board for because I love Paris. I would say that is the biggest. I mean, you know, that's the most common one. Or is like Paris.
That's true. But, that's true. So Scotland, no, so I'm going to say Scotland. I've always loved, you know, if I could just have like a house on Isle of Skye, I'd be so happy.
Ugh, right? Like,
that's,
oh my Lord.
That's the dream. You know, I spent an entire semester in Scotland and somehow managed to not go to Skye. So I'm pissed about it. It's okay. I'll go back. But yes,
you will go Skye. Back. You absolutely will go back. Gorgeous. Okay. Wow. These are really good answers. I feel like I want all of these answers. So I'm nervous for you of what you're going to end up with. Give me a word that describes how you felt when you woke up this morning.
Discombobulated.
Oh my God. How dare you? How even dare you?
I'm sorry.
First, I got a discombobulated. Okay. Unprecedented. Unprecedented. Enjoy vamping because you're going to have to tell people about the Ozymandias Project and further tell them about the podcast, Ancient Office Hours. I have 15. I've got to get through 15s of all of these.
I am so sorry. You know, you just caught me during midterm week.
Sometimes when people say six, I sort of already, I'm starting to kind of know what that means about what they're going to get. And I can promise you, I have no idea what you're going to end up with because this is an unprecedented number. And go.
Okay. So I am pretty findable because I want to model basically being an findable and accessible academic. So I am on all the social medias at Lexi Henning, but that's just my personal stuff. I'm pretty boring. I suppose you can go there for like pretty pictures of my adventures living in Greece for a year. So if you want that, you can find that. Otherwise, you can find my business, The Ozymandias Project, Ozymandias, Ozymandias, just in case. But my business is findable on all the social medias under the Ozymandias Project. We're also on LinkedIn under that as a business. And I guess like the short version is we are a company that started as a podcast wanting to educate people and make academia more accessible to everyone through kind of fun anecdotes, fun stories, learning about not only the research and all the different fields, but about the people who study it, just to make them more relatable. And kind of from that, we decided that we were going to do multiple projects. So as I said earlier, we have our new publishing arm. So our little digital magazine is actually called Pnyx, P-N-Y-X, Pnyx Publishing. So if you have anything to say about, you know, the ancient world, please submit something to us. You can find our submission guidelines on our website, www.theosmandiasproject.com. We would love to just get any cool mythology related things. And then our other big project so far is our archaeogaming initiative. And basically what this is using video games set in the ancient world. I hope to make short, fun, educational videos basically talking about the history and the archaeology. And eventually I hope to give them to teachers and put them in the classroom so that can watch and learn.
I mean, listen, this is all great. I have no doubt that all of that will come to fruition. And frankly, some of this feels like it could also happen based on everything that we've been talking about and everything that you just said. There's some really nice stuff happening here. I feel like there are a lot of pairings that are happening nicely. Although, as I say that, I'm not totally sure what I mean. Well, I'll tell you. The reason that initially jumped out at me was that you have the ability to jump into the game Pharaoh whenever you want. But maybe that's just some like light training for the fact that you can also go back to ancient Egypt and ask Amarna. Is Amarna?
Amarna.
Am I saying that right? Amarna. Yeah, I thought period. So. And then I got scared because I was thinking of Aparna and Anchurla. And I was like, wait, am I saying Amarna because it's like Aparna? But it is Amarna. Great.
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten everything I ever knew. Okay, so I like that pairing, right? I mean, you have the sort of VR version and then you have the real life version. So fabulous on that. Here's another pairing for you. You, I guess, are an earthbender through and through because it has even come through in this MASH game. So not surprising also that you have your dear, dear buddy Toph alongside with you for all of these adventures.
Yes.
I also want to say, again, from everything that you were just talking about, it's probably no surprise to people that you ended up with your dream professorial job of sort of being this advocate and being able to really welcome people into the sort of circle of study that they might need that ambassador to take them into. So congratulations on that. That being said, you did get a mansion, but it's not Ashford Castle because it is a mansion on the Isle of Skye.
Yes.
And you're sharing perfect, flawless, delicious baguettes with the Robert Pattinson of Water for Elephants. I mean, that's not too bad right there.
Oh, man.
That's like a very successful MASH game.
Oh, man. Oh, I don't think I would change anything. I guess the only thing I might change is, darn it, I wish it ended up with Annabeth, daughter of Athena. That just would have fit the whole like thing. But it's fine. It's fine.
Listen, as we know, I say romance and sexy times. I do not say lifelong partner. So you can dump his ass whenever you feel like it and go chase down Annabeth. It's totally fine with me.
Great.
Lexi, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. I'm so glad we did it. I'm so impressed by you. And I hope people feel very inspired by all of the stuff that you have both going on and that, you know, you've sort of processed and gone through and come to continually new understandings about. May that be a lesson to all of us in our own lives and inspiration, whether or not it has to do with our own genetic background or something entirely different. Like, don't be afraid to revisit stuff time and again and see kind of how you come at it in a different way. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Lexi. I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Bye.
The show is produced by Julian Burrell and Christian Duenas.
And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.